Ladies and gentlemen, welcome along to our fifth monthly maintenance lifestyle call. It's great to be on the call with you, and I really enjoy these because one of the really frustrating things for me when we do the program is that we can't unpack in a 12-week period all the things that we really need to. So these calls, we can really delve into some really interesting subjects, and we have got some really, really good subjects lined up for the rest of the year, and really good topics, by the way, ones that will really set things straight for you and really get things, you'll start thinking about things in different ways. So I'm looking forward to the maintenance calls for the rest of the year, but today we've got a pretty interesting one because today we're going to look at the most basic of basic things, which is rice. We're going to unpack the question of rice because there's actually quite a bit to know about rice, and it's quite amazing to understand what the food industry does to this food and what people are eating, and they believe that it's actually quite healthy for them, and it can be quite the opposite. So I'm looking forward to tonight's call and sharing that information with you. Now, just before we get started, as usual, call quality is very important on these calls. So background noise will ruin the call for everybody. If you've got a dog barking in the background, birds chirping away, TV going, whatever it happens to be, if it's coming through your microphone, everybody will actually hear that noise, and it can be quite annoying on the call. So if you've got a noisy background, the way to deal with it is if you hit *6 on your phone, you'll actually mute your microphone. If you haven't got a noisy background, leave your microphone open because I like to hear a little bit of interaction, and if everything goes really quiet, it almost sounds like the call's dead at my end. So if you don't have a noisy background, just leave it open. That would be fantastic. If you want to say something, and I actually encourage you through the call to even ask questions. There'll be a bit of a time to ask questions at the end of the call, but at any stage, you can just sort of *6, unmute yourself if you're muted, and you can ask a question or contribute to the conversation because that's what these calls are all about. So to unmute yourself, *6. Now, very important, if the call drops, so if it drops from your end, just dial straight back in and rejoin the call. It has happened to me once. If the call drops at my end, do not hang up. I will be calling back straight away. So if you give me 30 seconds, I'll be back on the call, if that ever happens. So I just wanted to let you know that. Okay, so what are we covering tonight? Again, welcome along to this special night. Like I said, I really look forward to these calls because they really do embed, in our thinking and ingrain in our thinking exactly what we need to be doing. We're going to do a very quick review of last month. We're going to do an update on current programs, and we have got some programs coming up. We're going to cover off as to what to do as a sponsor. We've got some sponsors on the call. We're in a very interesting stage at this time, so I just want to spend 30 seconds on that component of it. And then we're going to have a look at the rice story, which is the bulk of the call. And this is really an interesting and fascinating subject. Then we're going to wrap it all up, and that'll be the end of the call, and should be done within the hour. So, like I said, if you've got any questions along the way, please ask, so the time can vary a little bit, but don't hold back. Okay, so just before we get going, who is on the call? On this call, it is only people that have completed the Diabetic Health Clinic program. So, I'm not expecting anybody else outside of us to be actually on this call. The purpose of these calls, like I said, is to really start unpacking in finer detail some of the things that I wish we could talk about through the 12-week period. 12 weeks is a long time, but this subject is so vast and so big that we could potentially spend a couple of weeks on every little bit of food and explore different components of it, how it's made and what they do to it and how it reacts in our bodies when we eat it, what it does, and we just don't have the time to do it. So the purpose of these calls is to actually unpack that. There is another purpose as well. We're all following this journey of being healthy. And being on a call once a month really helps us stay on track. It focuses our thinking. So that's a really big part of the reason why we run these calls. This call is a part of the lifestyle maintenance program. As time goes on, you will see some amazing things happen through the lifestyle maintenance program. We have to start somewhere. We're starting with the calls, but you're going to see some pretty cool things happen. So hold on for those. Okay, a quick review from last month. Last month we looked at fats, and fats is one of the most misunderstood things on the supermarket shelf. If you were not on the call, those notes are in your members area, and there's a recording of that call there as well. We discovered that there were good fats and bad fats. So we spoke about things like saturated fat, monosaturated fat, polyunsaturated fat, and things like hydrogenized fats as well. So they're the sort of fats that we spoke about. We found that in the main, processed foods used fat, bad fats. And we also discovered that bad fats are bad because they are chemically changed so that they last for pretty much ever. And the closest thing that, their closest brother actually is plastic, chemically speaking. And these fats are the fats that are used in most of the packaged foods. We looked at cooking temperatures and which good fats to use. And obviously avocado oil we spoke about, which has got the highest burning point or highest smoke point. Okay, so I just want to give you a very quick update on current programs. So all our programs are currently finished. I've just completed the Landsborough program last week. We have the dinner coming up. If you live in Brisbane or if you're around the Sunshine Coast area and you completed our conference call program, if you would like to come along to one of our dinners, please let Joanne know. Her email is joanne@diabetichealthclinic.org. So J-O-A-N-N-E @diabetichealthclinic.org. If you've done a program in Glasshouse or somewhere in the area and you'd like to come along, please do. We'd love to have you there. So just email Joanne and just let her know how many will be coming, and we would love to have you there. Okay, so the update on current programs is the following. We have a new conference call program starting in the next couple of weeks, and that is on the 23rd of the 9th. If you have not sponsored someone, you can get someone onto this program without any problems at all. If you go to your members page, you can just click become a sponsor and follow the bouncing ball there and you can finalise everything there. If you know someone in the area, please encourage them to join, or if you know someone at all, anywhere for that matter, encourage them to join. They can dial in from almost anywhere in the world for this conference call program, as you know. And the conference call programs are very well attended. I haven't looked at the moment, but I think at the moment we've got about 20 registrations and it hasn't actually been advertised yet, and I haven't put on the people that have been sponsored as yet into that figure. So it's going to be quite a sizable group. But I encourage you to get people onto the program. We also have a new NAMBOR program starting. So we're moving north up the coast. And that will be commencing on October the 4th, and that will be in Nambour. So if you know anybody on the sunny coast, Nambour, Maroochydore, Caloundra, you know, any of those sort of areas, encourage them to come along. This is a free community program, this one, so they just come along. Just very quickly, what to do as a sponsor? At this stage, we're in that transition period where we're not running a program, we're about to. They give your people a call or drop them an email and encourage them. They are starting soon. So keep reminding them, it's starting soon. This week, we will speak from our end to everybody that you've sponsored into the conference call program. So they will be getting a call from us. They'll be enrolled. They'll be getting information from us. Encourage them. Tell them that they are going to love the experience. You guys know what it's all about. It's quite an amazing journey. It's a very powerful journey. So just encourage people that you're in touch with and say, look, you're going to love it. Okay, so that's what you can do as a sponsor for the next couple of weeks. All right, now, I'd like to move on. Before I move on, is there any questions on what I've just spoken about? Star 6 to unmute yourself if you've got a question, if you're muted. No? Okay. If you've got any questions and you just want to find out about the dinner or whatever, just email Joanne. That's probably the only question that will pop up out of that conversation. Okay, so let's move on to today's topic, because today's topic is the rice story. And I thought that we would cover rice because it's one of those things that people look at as a very healthy option. But the question is it really a healthy option? What's the story with this food? We all know that there's quite a few different rices available, so we want to unpack all of that and start thinking about what we should be eating from the point of view of healthy, clean eating and what we should be avoiding. So here we go with the rice story. It's quite an amazing story. Rice is the world's most used food, or one of the world's most used foods. It is a food that absolutely everybody is familiar with and everybody's had regardless of what country you live in. It is widely consumed across the world, mainly in Asian countries who are the largest consumers of rice. If we look at the Asian countries, which is sort of our region, by the way, this is overall per capita where the highest rice consumption occurs. Interestingly enough, this is very fascinating, when you start looking at the figures, as they get wealthier, their rice consumption slows. And you especially see this in countries like India and China, where there are provinces and areas that have actually become extremely wealthy. When you look at those areas, you actually see a very, very sharp, a major decline in rice consumption, and they start turning to meats and dairy, which is basically what we do in the Western world. So the leading rice consumers in the world are the following. And we can see China tops the lot, and this is 148,400 million tons, metric tons of rice gets consumed in this country. Then we've got India, Indonesia, Bangladesh, Vietnam, Philippines, Thailand, Burma, Japan, Brazil, Nigeria, South Korea, United States, Egypt, and Cambodia. So that's how the world rice consumption looks. So the question is, what is rice? Where did it come from? Well, a little bit of history on rice and what it is. Rice is the seed of the grass species Oryza sativa. It's an Asian rice, or Oryza glabrima. It's an African rice. As a cereal grain, it is the most widely consumed staple food for a large part of the world's human population. Like we said, especially in Asia. It is the agricultural commodity with the third highest worldwide production. And that's after sugarcane and maize, according to the 2012 FOASTAT data. So it's a very highly produced and very widely grown crop. Rice is actually the most important grain in regards to human nutrition and caloric intake. It provides more than one-fifth of all calories consumed worldwide by humans. That's huge. Is one particular food that's providing one-fifth of the calories that humans consume. Chinese legends attribute the domestication of rice to Shennong, the legendary emperor of China and the inventor of Chinese agriculture. Genetic evidence, however, has shown that rice originates from a single domestication thousands of years ago in the Pearl River Valley region of China. Previously, archaeological evidence has suggested that rice was domesticated in the Yangtze River Valley region of China. From East Asia, rice was spread to Southeast and South Asia. Rice... can everybody still hear me?
Yes.
Yep, okay, good. I've just got a little bit of a an echo, that's all. Okay. Rice was introduced to Europe through Western Asia and to the Americas through European colonisation. So as it sort of spread in popularity, it eventually made it through to Europe through those Asian corridors. And so it was started to be used in Europe. Rice can come in many shapes, colours and sizes. And we're going to talk about some of those today. There are many varieties of rice and culinary preferences tend to vary regionally. In some areas such as the Far East or Spain, there is a preference for softer or stickier varieties. Every country's got a slightly different angle on what they like. In Australia, as with most Western countries, the preference is for the refined white rice. Now, I don't know if you've noticed, if you go into Australia, say to some, or to an Australian home or to anywhere sort of in Australia and you say, brown rice, they go, oh, really? Yuck. But white rice is absolutely perfect, right? So it's just interesting how we've adapted our taste for white rice. The reason for this is because over many years we have been actually sold white rice in this country. If you go down to your supermarkets, the majority of the rice that's on the supermarket shelves is white rice. Now, as our communities become more aware of the health issues that foods can cause or the way that foods can actually help with health issues, there's all of a sudden demand for other products starting up, and so we're seeing a lot of other varieties of rices on the shelves. However, the predominant variety in Australia is still rice. And one of the reasons why it's been actually sold to us over so many years, it's because it's easier for the food factories because it keeps longer and we have simply become accustomed to the taste, which has become our preference. So essentially, the white rice has been sold to us because it sits on the shelf for much, much longer. There's no other real reason. So let's have a look at white rice versus brown rice. Now, we've all been through the Diabetic Health Clinic program, and we speak about brown rice. Why do we do that? And what's the difference? Why is it such an important difference? Well, here we go. Let's have a look. First of all, let's just have a very quick look at some of the different varieties of rices that are actually available for us to purchase. Now, some of these are available on the supermarket shelves. Some are available in sort of more boutique health food shops. But all of these rices are actually available in Australia today. We all know of brown rice and white rice, but how many different types of rices really are there? Well, here we go. There's long or medium grain white rice. There's two different types. Short grain white rice, jasmine rice, basmati rice, Calrose rice, Arborio rice, brown rice, sushi rice, wild rice, clever rice, and black rice. Do you know that there was that many different types? And they're all available here, by the way. You can purchase them here. So most people really think about rice as brown or white rice and then basmati rice. Now, in a lot of these rices, when we say basmati rice, for example, you can have white basmati rice or you can have the whole grain basmati rice as well. So it splits even further. There is a huge variety of rices. So most varieties of rice can either be purchased as white or brown rice. White is used as it keeps longer. So for the shop owner and for the supermarket chains, their expiry dates on white rice extend a lot. They have a lot less hassle with it, and so it's for the ease of running their business. They love it because it keeps longer. It is also quicker to cook. For those of you who have cooked brown rice, you will know that the cooking time probably doubles. And because people have become accustomed to the taste of white rice, it has actually become the preferred rice from a taste point of view. And this is where the thinking about, oh, brown rice, yuck, comes in. For people that have eaten different types of rices, what you will find is that brown rice is actually more flavoursome. There's other rices which have almost got a floury taste and sense to them as well, which we'll talk about a little bit later. But from a taste point of view, just your standard white rice actually contains the least taste, and yet this is the one that for some reason we like the most. Rice, as it is picked, it includes what is called the hull. Okay, so we're talking about how does rice end up being white here. So rice, as it is picked off the plant, it actually includes what is called the hull. And I've got a picture here of what rice actually looks like when it's picked. So you can see that it's got at the end of it, a little beard. It's got a hull, which is a shell around the rice. It's got a starchy, what's called endosperm, which is the inside. It's got a germ. And it's got another sort of inside layer. And if you look towards the bottom right-hand side of the screen, you'll actually see how that brown layer is broken up. And this is key to understanding what brown rice actually is. So on the outside, you've got the hull. In the middle, you've got what's called the bran layer. And then further inside the rice, you've got what's called the polish zone. Okay, so it's very important to understand those three layers. You've got the hull, the bran, and the polish layer. Obviously, anything that is processed, as we know from the program, anything that is processed becomes a white mononutrient which is detrimental to our health. Most of the time it goes white. White flour, white sugar, white rice, white whatever else we've got. There are some exceptions to the rule, and that's things like high fructose corn syrup, which they've taken to another level of refining. And that stuff's actually clear. But we all know that these mononutrients are detrimental to our health. Here is how rice that is harvested actually becomes white. Because it's in its hull. There's no way it's white. So first of all, harvesting. Once the plants have reached full growth, which is approximately 3 months after planting, generally speaking, and that depends a little bit on the climate and the variety that you're growing, but we'll call it 3 months. So once all of that happens and the grains begin to ripen, the tops begin to droop and the stem yellows. The water is then drained from the fields. As the fields dry, the grains ripen further And at that stage, harvesting is actually commenced. After harvesting, we then get to a period where the rice needs to be dried. Now, traditionally, with drying, they were dried out in the paddocks or fields. Now we have drying centres. But before milling, rice grains must be dried in order to decrease the moisture content to between 18 and 22%. This is done with artificially heated air, more often with the help of naturally occurring sunshine. Rice grains are left on racks in fields to dry out naturally. Once dried, the rice grain, now called rough rice, is ready for processing. Now, in today's modern world, we no longer do this in fields. So if the rice is harvested somewhere in Asia, in sort of fairly poor areas, it still might be dried out in the paddock. But in our industrialised world, what we're actually doing is we're using what's called rice drying centres. And here's an example of what a rice drying centre looks like. So the rice goes in these trays, in the racks, through this whole wall setup, and just hot air is blown through it. From there, the next stage of the process is actually called hulling. So what is hulling? Hulling can be done by hand. In the old days, that's how it was done, at least, by rolling or grinding the rough rice between stones. However, more often it is processed in a mill with the help of an automated process. The rough rice is first cleaned by passing through a number of sieves that sift out the debris. As you can imagine, this stuff comes in from the paddock, so there's all sorts of stuff. Blown air removes the top matter. Once clean, the rice is hulled by a machine that mimics the action of handheld stones. The shelling machine loosens the hulls from the rice by rolling them between two sheets of metal coated with abrasives. 80 to 90% of the kernel hulls are removed during this process. So that outer layer that we saw on that picture is stripped off by this process. From the shelling machine, the grains and the hulls are conveyed onto what's called the stone reel that aspirates the waste hulls and moves the kernels to a machine that separates the hulled from the unhulled grains. We've got that 10% of unhulled grains in the mixture, so they're actually siphoned off and put back to square one to be hulled again. By shaking the kernels, the paddy machine forces the heavier unhulled grains to one side of the machine while the lighter weight rice falls to the other end. The unhulled grains then are siphoned to another batch of shelling machines to complete the hulling process. Hulled rice grains are known as brown rice. And this is where we get our brown rice from. So what essentially happens is that we have this situation where the rice comes in from the paddock, it's dried, the outer shell is removed, and then when it's packaged up as brown rice, that's exactly what it is. So if you go and buy brown rice, whatever it happens to be, in your supermarket or your shop or health food shop or wherever, that's what you're actually buying. However, it doesn't stop there. But before we go on, I'll actually show you what a rice hulling machine looks like. So this is a typical example of what a rice hulling machine is. It's quite an industrial thing, but it actually replicates those grinding stones. That's all it's doing. It's, at this stage of the process, it's actually quite good, quite safe, and there's no issues. At this stage, when all of this is over, we now have brown rice. Since it retains, and this is now the key to brown rice, since it retains the outer bran layers of the rice grain, brown rice needs no other processing. However, along with added vitamins and minerals, the bran layers also contain oil that makes brown rice spoil faster than milled white rice. See, because there's still oil in there, the rice doesn't last as long. It spoils much quicker. And of course, this is one of the reasons why brown rice is milled further to create a more visually appealing white rice. And here's the other thing. For some reason, when we look at rice, we feel that visually a white rice looks much nicer. It's cleaner, whatever, however we envisage it. We think that white rice, for that reason, is better for us. But in actual fact, have a look at what happens, because the next stage is actually the rice milling plant. And this is a typical example of what a rice milling plant would look like. So the brown rice runs through two huller machines that remove the outer bran layers from the grain. With the grains pressed against the inner wall of the huller and spilling core, the bran layers are rubbed off. The core and inner wall move closer to the second hulling, ensuring removal of all bran layers. So now we're actually taking away that bran layer, which when we look at rice, it is in that layer that we have all of the minerals, vitamins, and the good oils that rice contains. Now the light-coloured grain is cooled and polished by what's called a brush machine. The smooth white rice is conveyed to what's called a brewer's reel, where over a wire mesh, screen broken kernels are sifted out. Oftentimes, the polished white rice is then coated, and get this, I bet you didn't know this, often it is coated with glucose to increase luster. That's nice for diabetics, isn't it? You're buying white rice, it's often coated with glucose. The milling process that produces white rice also removes much of the vitamins and minerals found primarily in the outer bran layers. Further processing is often done in order to restore the nutrients to the grain. It's an interesting concept. Once complete, the rice is called converted rice in the lingo. Rice that has already been milled can be submersed in a vitamin and mineral bath that coats the grains, and this is called enriching. So, processed rice. Now, this is the way that rice pans out. Because rice, when harvested, so off the plant, it is 46% carbohydrate, by the time that it goes through this process of removing the hull and then removing that bran layer, it becomes simply a processed carbohydrate, a simple carbohydrate, which we all know what these things lead to. You see, upon ingestion, within a few short minutes, it is metabolized into sugar in unnatural quantities and in an unnatural time frame. We all know that when we do that, the first thing that our body tries to do is it tries to eliminate this onslaught of sugars hitting our bloodstream, and so our insulin levels spike. And that is, for everybody that's ended up with a diabetic situation, or for people that are struggling with weight, that spiking of insulin levels is the root cause of the problem. Well, the root cause of the problem is eating the processed foods, which spike the insulin levels. But that's how the process works. And so even small amounts of spikes created during a week or during a day affect the way that your body deals with things like your metabolism and weight and all those sort of issues. The idea is, from a health point of view, that we no longer create any spikes at all, which, as you all know, really reverts back to being in a situation where we don't ingest any factory-made foods, or as I've started to call them now, factory-assembled foods. You see, at this point, the rice has just become a high GI, or glycemic index food, that can be equivalent to ingesting sugar. It's like our white bread metabolises within 4 minutes into sugar. One slice of supermarket bread, by the way, can produce 4 tablespoons of sugar. Now, that'll spike your insulin nicely. And so rice does a very similar sort of thing, white rice or processed rice. So the question now is, which rice? There's so many rices available, which one should we be going for? Which one should we be touching and why? So glycemic index, let's have a look at very quick look at the glycemic index. Now I'm not going to spend a lot of time on this, and the glycemic index is actually a little bit limited because there's another thing called the glycemic load, which I'm not going to go into on this call because we simply don't have time. We will most likely next year do a call on GI and GI loads, one call, so we actually get a really good understanding of how these things work. The glycemic index is a way of measuring how fast a particular food is digested or metabolized and the effect it has on your blood sugar levels. So I like to use the word metabolized instead of digested, because when we think about digestion, it's something that happens in our stomach, and then as the food travels through the digestive tract, more digestion happens and so forth and so on. So we think about digestion as something that happens deep down. The reality is that the processed foods often start to convert into sugars in our mouth when they hit the saliva. And it happens very quickly at that point. So going back to our white breads, if you take a slice of white bread and you chew on it for 4 minutes, you'll actually end up in your mouth with an extremely sweet paste that you just have to simply spit out. It actually happened in your mouth. So a more accurate word is metabolize. So the glycemic index is a way of measuring how fast a particular food is metabolized and the effect it has on your blood sugar levels. And of course it's going to have an effect, because if you're dumping that amount of sugar into your bloodstream, it's going to go up. White bread is assigned a value of 100 as a GI value, and other foods are compared with that. Okay, so that's sort of become, in a way, for many people, this sort of benchmark figure where white bread is 100, because that's what it was assigned to. White rice obviously has a higher GI and brown rice has a lower GI. In addition, other factors make brown rice a healthier choice for your menu. And these are all of the vitamins and minerals and oils that are contained in that layer. All carbohydrates are not digested by your body at the same rate or metabolized by your body at the same rate. A better way to measure the digestibility of carbohydrates is the glycemic index. This index measures the changes in blood sugar levels after you eat a particular food. And usually researchers measure this with 100 grams of food over a couple of hours after ingestion. The glycemic load, which we'll talk about on a later call, varies the quantity of food, so it's a more accurate measure. Foods that cause large increases in blood sugar levels have what's called a high glycemic index or a high GI, while those that don't cause large increases have a low GI. So white bread is considered a high GI food because it produces a lot of sugar in your body very quickly. Typically, foods that contain sugars rapidly, boost blood sugar levels, and so they have a high GI. Starchy foods are digested more slowly and tend to have a lower GI. So white rice. White rice is the same plant as brown rice, but white rice is actually only the inner part of the rice grain. Everything else has been stripped off. The milling process removes the indigestible outer hull and then the bran, leaving only the starchy white endosperm. Now, by the way, that outer hull of the rice is not something that a human would digest. It actually has to be removed. Because the milling process removes all the vitamins from the rice, in the US at least, and there are some of these fortified rices here as well, if you look around, most white rice has B vitamins added back into it. So if you think about how ridiculous that is, we remove all the vitamins and then we add one in and we call it a fortified rice. The GI index of white rice is 44. For converted rice, 56. For long grain rice, 72. And for short grain, 72 for short grain white rice. Brown rice is less processed than white rice. The rice grains have the outer hull removed, but the underlying bran and germ layers are left in the grain. The bran layers are what makes the rice brown. Visually, that's what you're seeing that brown colour. Brown is more nutritious than white rice because it has the bran that contains the vitamins, minerals, and, of course, the oils. It also has more fibre than white rice. Brown rice is sometimes called whole grain rice. The glycemic index of brown rice is 55, putting it about equivalent to long grain white rice. And this is where the GI index now starts to break down. Because if you are just looking at the GI index, you'll say, well, you know, I can have the long grain white rice, and I'm right because it's got the same GI as, you know, the brown rice. However, what you're still missing out on is all of those vitamins, minerals, oils, and the extra fibre. Now, this is where we don't really talk about the glycemic index, the glycemic load, but quite often the glycemic load can be quite different for these grains as well, and it is far better with the brown rice, obviously. So, brown rice is a better food than white rice because of its additional fibre nutrients it contains. Since larger amounts of fibre contribute to fullness, and this is very important, the more fibre you eat, the more fuller you feel. You may actually eat less and thus have a lower glycemic load from this brown rice. And that's essentially what happens. So the question now is, which rice is the best rice? We have on the picture here a rice, and I don't know if anybody can guess what that rice is. It actually looks like a very nice meal. You know, people that have been through the program, when you see a meal like that in front of you, it's a stunning meal. The flavours are fantastic. And everything there is actually nice and healthy. But which rice is the best rice? It is well known in the diabetic circles that whole grain basmati rice is the best option by far. And I'm going to pull out a little bit of a surprise at the end of this section, because there is one rice that can even be just a slight bit better than basmati rice. Basmati rice, particularly whole grain basmati rice. So you can actually buy the two types of basmati rices. You can buy the white stuff with all the goodies removed, or you can have the brown stuff with all the goodies on it. So basmati rice, particularly whole grain basmati rice, can and should be a regular addition to the diets of people who suffer from diabetes. We recommend it. It's a recommended food for people with metabolic issues. And if you're trying to lose weight, it's a good option as well. Basmati rice is naturally low energy, it's a naturally low energy food, but as with all carbohydrate food, it's the portion size that is important. So you don't want to overeat it just like with any other carbohydrate. The average serving of boiled basmati rice is 150 to 180 grams. That's what a normal person, an average adult, would consume. It provides somewhere between 207 and 248 calories. A small serving, which is 100 grams, provides approximately 138 calories. By contrast, if you're looking at a typical takeaway rice, you know, your fried rice, a typical serving to satisfy a normal person, a normal adult, is around 300 grams. So I want you to picture this. You're eating the real stuff with all the fibre and all the goodies on it, and to be satisfied, you're going to eat about 180 grams. If you're a lady, probably 150. But if you go to a takeaway shop, to actually achieve the same satisfaction as far as now I'm full, you actually have to consume 300 grams. That's a major difference. And that will provide you with 558 calories. So it's important to not to assume that all rice types are the same. It's one other thing to remember. When you have your basmati brown rice, it's actually a whole grain rice, which metabolises much slower and doesn't spike your insulin levels. The 300 grams of white fried rice that you get in your takeaway shop, that's going to send your blood sugar level sky high. Don't forget, if it's white, it becomes sugar much, much quicker. So be careful selecting your rices. Plain white jasmine rice. Now, jasmine is seen by many people as a very healthy option. Be careful with it. Plain white jasmine rice has a high GI, approximately 109. It's actually higher than white bread, which means that when you put it in your mouth, the journey for it to metabolise into sugar is actually quicker than what it is with white bread. And when you compare it to basmati rice, that has a GI of 58. That's a major difference. Major difference. With low GI foods like basmati, you can keep your hunger and your weight in control. If you're eating the stuff that metabolizes very quickly, here's what happens. You ingest it. You spike your insulin, it goes through the roof because the body has to deal with the onslaught of sugar. Now your body absorbs all the sugar, soaks it in like a sponge, creates a whole heap of fat cells for you, puts on the weight because it's all happened so quickly. But now that all that sugar has actually been taken out of your bloodstream, now you're feeling like you need to eat again. You're hungry again. So now not only are you packing this stuff into your body at rates which are unnatural to your body and you're spiking the insulin levels, putting on weight, but now you're actually trying to replace all of that stored energy because you still need energy in your bloodstream for your day-to-day living. So when you have a low GI food, like basmati, you actually short-circuit that process. Because it's only got a GI of 58, what you're going to be doing is you're going to be ingesting it. The whole process takes a long time and everything works in a nice, smooth fashion and you don't stack on the weight. You don't create the metabolic issues that you do with the refined stuff. So let's have a look a little bit further. If we look at a cooked cup, the sweet, sticky or waxy rices have got 37 grams of carbs, 1.7 grams of fibre, and have a GI of 86, so they're quite high. Black rice. Now, black rice, because of its colour, people often say, oh, this is a very, very good rice. Fantastic. This is the stuff you've got to be eating. Be careful with it. 32 grams of carbs, 2 grams of fibre, and a GI of 78. Quite high still. Basmati rice will provide you, a cup will provide you with 44 grams of carb, 1 gram of fibre, and a GI of 58. A And here's the surprise one. For some reason, we stopped at basmati rice and said, well, basmati rice is the one for diabetics. But you can go one step further. Wild rice has got 35 grams of carbs, so it's lower on the carbs, 3 grams of fibre, higher on the fibre, and its GI is just a touch lower at 57. Like we said, with low GI foods like basmati and black rice, you can actually keep your hunger and your weight in control. Which when you think about our modern day society, ladies and gentlemen, it's not just important for diabetics. All of our population should be eating rice because it's actually very nutritious for us. However, what we should be doing is we should be staying away from the refined stuff. And in that way, you become full, satisfied, without causing your body all of those problems that we spoke about. So at this point, I'd just like to open up the call. Are there any questions from anyone in regards to rice? Any comments, anything that you've observed, any knowledge that I haven't passed on? Would anybody like to share anything?
Peter, it's Robin Tomlinson. How are you doing?
Good, Robin. How are you?
I'm well, thanks. I just wanted to ask you about the brown rice. I haven't been game to have it since, or for months really, because even though having the wholemeal basmati from the health shop, I still, I've been keeping really, really good, but when I had it, my sugars still went up to about, I think it was 8.
Yeah, okay. So that's a very, very valid question, by the way. Okay, so for you it might be rice. For someone else it might be cashews. Everybody's a little bit different. Now, by the way, when you say it goes, your blood sugar levels go up to 8, that's not really something to be too concerned about.
But it is
because
2 hours,
when you talk,
you know, at the 2 hours after it's 8.
Well, 2 hours is the peak, right?
Yeah.
At the 4 hour mark, it should be back to baseline. That's what you should be just as concerned about. So the two should really go hand in hand. Obviously, if you're spiking your blood sugar levels, that's, you know, something to look at. But also at the same time, what you really need to be looking at is how quickly those blood sugar levels are falling. The two-hour mark is the...
Sorry, so you should check it at 4 hours as well?
Well, at 4 hours, it should be back to baseline, yeah.
Okay.
So if you have someone that's a non-diabetic and you say throw a Coke and a Mars bar at them, you'll probably elevate their blood sugar levels quite nicely at the two-hour mark. And then at the four-hour mark, they'll be back to baseline. A diabetic will continue sailing on at quite high sugar levels far beyond the four-hour mark. When you have your HbA1c done, Robin, the HbA1c is an average of the last 90 days, the second-by-second average.
Well, my last
Go on.
The last one was 6, so that's pretty good, isn't it?
Well, you're a non-diabetic. At 6, you're a non-diabetic.
That's pretty cool.
Okay, 6.4 is a pre-diabetic situation. So you're actually in a very good range. So, and this is where we need to be careful with what these sort of foods do to us. The rule is, if it's unprocessed, even if you spike your blood sugar levels, it's not going to reverse anything that you've done. You've got to really have that on your mind. However, one of the things that you can do, Robin, is now that you know that rice actually spikes your blood sugar levels a little bit, put it aside and try it, say, once every month or once every couple of months. Have a meal of it and see what happens to your blood sugar levels. Don't forget about one thing. Diabetes is something that's happened over many, many years. It doesn't happen just overnight. And so you get better over a period of time as well. I often talk about watermelons because for me, watermelon was like a disaster zone. If I had a watermelon, my blood sugar levels went through the roof. After my lifestyle changed, they were no longer 20 or higher than 20. My blood sugar levels were sitting at you know, 12, 10, 14, in that range after watermelon.
Does it mean if you say had
almost,
Sorry,
I'll just finish this. 4 years down the track, I can have my watermelon near the pool and my blood sugar levels don't even hardly move. So whatever's happened over a period of time, it's my body has become more responsive to insulin. So if you're spiking with rice, brown rice, say to 8 or 9, let it go for a month or a couple of months, do it again, and you might find you're only spiking to 7, which is an indicator that you're actually doing better, you're getting healthier. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does actually. Is it a bad sign if when you have it the night before, you might wake up in the morning at 6.8?
Look, a lot of things happen overnight. It's not just what you've eaten. It's also how long you've been asleep, how long the period of time has been where you haven't eaten. 6.8 is, you know, you should be 6.5 or lower, but you can get freak mornings, and even healthy people do.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes a healthy person will get up in the morning and they'll have a higher than normal blood sugar level. Stress can quite often really affect your blood sugar level. So if you take a healthy population, and let's say they've had a death in the family, quite often for a couple of weeks they've actually got quite high blood sugar levels. Okay?
Right.
So there are things that vary that. That's why the HbA1c is so important, Robin, because the HbA1c takes all of those bumps and valleys out of the whole thing and gives you an average of the 90 days.
If you're sitting at six,
congratulations, that's fantastic.
Yeah, I think it's really cool, but I am a little worried still because that included 1 month of juicing. I'm worried about that it might be higher with, you know, a full month, full 3 months of eating.
You'll probably find that it won't be. Normally what happens is the second test that you go for is actually better than the first test. That's the norm, statistically.
Yeah.
So the most important thing is just don't put anything processed in your mouth, that's all.
Yeah.
And you'll be right.
That's great,
you know?
Thank you.
And watch things like your eyes. Use it as an indicator how you're progressing as far as your health improvement goes. And really what you're defining there is, you know, in a year's time, if you have the rice and it no longer spikes to 8, it stays at 6.5, what that really means is that your cells have become even more responsive to insulin over that time. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's excellent. Thank you.
All right. Okay, any other questions?
Peter,
or
hi.
Observation?
Yeah.
Hi, how are you?
I'm good, thanks. Now, about brown rice, so is any variety of brown rice is good? Because just last week I saw jasmine brown rice for the first time.
Jasmine brown rice will have a high GI.
Okay.
Because jasmine rice has a high GI. So as a diabetic, what you should be having as far as rice goes, the best option by far is basmati rice, which is available virtually everywhere, and you need to get the best option is the whole grain, the brown one.
Yep.
So you've got a GI of 58. With jasmine, you'll be hovering about 100, even with the brown stuff.
Okay.
Right, which is the same as bread almost. Or wild rice. Okay, those two are the best options, and they're the ones that you should really be sticking to. They're the rices that we should be eating.
Yep. Okay. And
if you're having basmati, but the brown rice, right?
The brown basmati rice.
Yeah, absolutely.
There's another variety called the aged basmati rice. I don't know what the difference is from the brown rice, but
yeah, I'd have to look into that. A lot of these rices now, there's different strains of basmati rice, but basmati rice, because it comes from the same family of rice, the GI is known to all be the same, right? So as long as it's brown and as long as it's basmati, you'll be absolutely fine.
Okay, thank you.
Now, what you can also do, and what a lot of people like to do with rice, is they'll buy, say, brown basmati rice, and they'll buy some wild rice, and they'll mix it through together. Mm-hmm. They'll mix the two. Right? And that's quite common. That's actually very nice to do that. So you can play around with those two. But they're the ones to have. Does that answer the question?
Yeah, yes, thanks.
Excellent. And look, you know, rice is there to be enjoyed. It's great with your meal. Like, it's really, really quick to do, say, a bit of a stir fry with some veggies and some nice avocado oil through it. Do a stir fry. You can put some spices in there as well, turmeric, things like that. And then have a nice salad with it. Makes a fantastic meal, and it's very quick to make, right? It also makes a great lunch if you make more for the evening. You can take it with you to work. I do that very often. And rice is a very, very good option, excellent option. But you need the right one. All right, any other questions or comments? I'll take the quiet as a no.
No, I'm fine.
Okay, everybody's fine. If you've got a question, yell. There's no reason why we can't deal with questions.
No, I think I'm pretty much.
Okay, no worries. Great. Okay, so I hope you enjoyed the call. I hope it's given you a little bit of insight into this thing we call rice. It's a very, very common food, but it's quite misunderstood. And it's actually, most people in our community don't understand what we've just been through. Now, we've just touched on little bits and pieces of it, but you've got enough knowledge now to understand what to do with rice from a health point of view and from a diabetic point of view. Obviously, after we've done this call, you can go away and do research on your own. If you hop on the internet and you start typing in rice and basmati rice and jasmine rice and all this sort of stuff, especially if you do it through Google Scholar and you look at some of the studies that have been done, there is information on rice. We could spend 6 months on this topic, but we don't need to understand what to do to be healthy. Okay, so you've got the skeleton of what you need to know to understand what to do from a diabetic point of view. So, in wrapping up, I always like to finish these calls with a little bit of a motivational thing, and I've been using this slogan, and I will keep using this slogan, and I'll keep, you know, bringing your mind back to this. We're all travelling down a very interesting journey. And you are the key to your success. You can do it. And there's five elements that you need to bring together to be really strong in your journey, to make your journey work for you. And the first thing is perseverance. Persevere with where you're going. You understand exactly how powerful this lifestyle change is. Persevere with it. Perseverance. Don't let it go. Keep doing it, keep doing it, keep doing it. By the way, what we're starting to discover now through this program is that the first 6 months is the most critical. In other words, if you can persevere with your new lifestyle for 6 months after you've completed the program, you actually get to a point where it becomes second nature. And it's just, that's it. You don't even think about it. The second key is getting along with people. Often when we go down this journey, you know, we want to have a go at people for the things that they do and they're not healthy and all the rest of it. That's not the way. Get along with people. Show them what you're doing, but show them in a really nice way. If you can help others into at least a little bit of a journey of their own, it will really, really strengthen your resolve in what you're doing. And if you've got the opportunity to sponsor someone into the program, this is a really big key for getting along. Confidence is a big one. Be confident about what you're doing. We've just heard Robin about how she's gone to the doctor and she's got a HbA1c of 6. That's fantastic. That's in a healthy range. That should give us confidence with what we're doing. If you've gone the other way and you've reverted back to some of those foods that you know you shouldn't be eating and you're looking at your results, especially if you're graphing them on our system and you're watching the graphs move up and all that sort of thing, it will give you confidence that eating the right foods are the right, is the right thing to do for your health. So confidence is a big one. Go out in confidence and do what you're doing. The next one is organisation. Organisation, because you need to be organised. You're doing something a little bit different. You're doing things that, you know, some of the population don't do. They don't even think about. Sushi, right? I go out and so we take doctors out and all that sort of thing. And, you know, when we go to the sushi place, I'm asking, we go to nice sushi places, I'm asking for the brown rice stuff. Everybody else is having the white rice stuff. And they look at you and they say, what are you doing, you know? But I'm organised because if I'm going to take someone out to a restaurant, I know that they've got the brown rice sushi. So organisation is a big one. Organise your pantry at home. Organise the things at home. If you're organised, it's easy. And then resilience is a huge one. Be resilient. As people tell you things, you're crazy, or you see advertising that keeps hammering you with stuff, be resilient. You've got an understanding that most other people don't even come close to having. And so that should be able to embed that resilience into you. It should run off like water off a duck's back. And as you move through that first six-month period and you expire that first six-month period and you stay true in that first six-month period, it actually becomes so easy that it's scary. You get to a point where you don't even think about putting anything else in your mouth except for non-processed foods. So you are the key to your own success. You can do it, and I really mean that. I've seen lots of people do it. And it is a wonderful thing to meet people 2 or 3 years down the track and they look fantastic, they're healthy. That's what life's all about. And the next lifestyle maintenance session will be on the Tuesday, the 13th of October, next month. I want you to put that date in your diary because this is our next lifestyle maintenance call. And we're going to be covering something very, very fascinating next month. We will be covering the topic of potatoes. Oh. As diabetics, we stay clear of potatoes. The question is why. We need to unpack that so you've got a very clear understanding. There's a lot of confusion about this food called the potato. So we're going to deal with that next week. You can register from tomorrow for this upcoming call once you receive your lifestyle maintenance follow-up email, and that will be coming out to you either very late tonight or tomorrow. On that note, I just want to ask, is there any other questions before we wrap up?
No, thank you.
Fantastic. Look, it's been absolutely fantastic to have you on the call. Thank you, and see you at the next lifestyle maintenance session. I'll be on the call to the last person hangs up, so if you still have a question, please hang around and ask. It's been a pleasure to have you on the call once again, and I look forward to next month. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, thanks, Pete.